This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Well, we don't actually think of him as the god of hellfire, although we think being associated with hellfire might be rather appropriate. We can't think of him as godlike in any way. And I think you know who we're talking about, Mr. You-Know-Who.
Me?
No! We're talking about Mr. Convicted Felon, who, and it pains us to say this, was sworn in as the 47th U.S. president. And I was asked the other day, has anyone ever lost the presidency and come back and taken it again? I said, yes, Grover Cleveland. It was the 22nd and 24th president, which now creates a tally of 45 individuals accounting for 47 presidencies. And I don't know, maybe you can win a bar bet on that one. We do note that this show, we're going to try and keep this up today in spite of what's going on. And I guess there's no better way to just take the bull by the horns than note that, yes, he was sworn in on the 20th of January, as is the tradition in America. And unlike the normal tradition in America where the president is sworn in, as are people in any courtroom in the country by putting their hand on a Bible, Donald Trump did not do so, as he meaninglessly mouthed the words that constitute the oath of office, the one that he completely violated 4 years ago. But the part I like best, and I think this is just a great symbol of how this whole second Trump administration is going to start, is the fact that when it was pointed out, and I was, perhaps pointed out to some of his Christian supporters, that my goodness, he somehow failed to put his hand on the Bible as he swore the oath. But true to form, gentleman that he is, Trump turned around and blamed his wife. I believe he said she was late coming in with the Bible. Now, statistically speaking, I'm prepared to believe that that is a lie. Because, well, what are the odds when Trump says something that it's the truth?
Very low.
Yeah, I would agree. But we're going to do our part to make this not an all-Trump episode today. I guess you can say we'll be going in and out of Trump. And as we're still in the in mode, I would like to point out that a surprising number of people that we've had on this program, such as Jefferson Morley, the proprietor of the JFK Facts website, and the man who actually sued the Central Intelligence Agency to get them to comply with the JFK Records Act and release the heretofore unreleased records pertaining to the Kennedy assassination. He lost that lawsuit, by the way, but has been very dynamic in going up against the government and trying to get them to do what the law says they're supposed to do. What shocks me is that Jeff Morley and a lot of other people in the research community that is looking at what happened to President Kennedy back in 1963, they want to believe that Donald Trump is going to release these records because he said he would. And another researcher we had on this show, Grover Proctor, and we would highly recommend you listening to our interview with Mr. Proctor some years back, telling about an astonishing story of a phone call that Lee Harvey Oswald tried to make while in police custody in Dallas. Grover Proctor decided to weigh in on the notion of Trump keeping his word, and said he fully expected Trump to keep his word exactly as well as he did last time he promised to release the records, which was in, 2016. Now, if you've been listening to this radio program for a long time, and we hope you have, you would note that as this developed, we lamented the fact that Trump, first of all, decided he wasn't going to comply with the law, kicked it down the road. Well, we'll decide on this later. And then decided once again to kick it down the road and say, well, we'll decide on this later. In the wake of him not winning re-election, the ball was kicked into the court of Joe Biden, who rather horrifyingly decided to state that, well, you know what, I've talked to the CIA and I've decided we really don't need to comply with this. We don't have to do it. The records that we've released are enough, which is contrary to the law. And frequent guests we've had on this program, Bill Simpich, has been involved in the lawsuits trying to get them to comply with the law. What a concept. And at some point, we'll have to bring Bill back on this program to talk about how things are developing. But really, people, because Trump said something, do you think he's going to do it? I mean, you know, we all have seen how that, you know, a wall was built with Mexico and Mexico paid for it. But let's jump out of JFK and pick up another topic, which is a little bit off the wall. We expressed the notion, at least I expressed the notion some while back, I guess last year, in the wake of the Super Bowl, where the Niners lost in a fantastic back-and-forth seesaw battle with the Kansas City Chiefs. I just wasn't sure the whole thing was legit. And I decided I was not going to be a fan anymore. And I kept to that in the 2024 football season. But I have to laugh now looking at the headlines of people looking at what's going on in the playoffs in the NFL and saying, hey, what's going on here? This officiating looks really suspicious. And of course, when you look at the amount of money that's now being spent on legal gambling in the U.S., you have to say, well, somebody would have a motivation to change the point spread. One of the playoff games, there was a 9-point spread. I believe this actually was also the Kansas City versus Houston game, wherein the 9-point spread would have made a bet on Houston the winner with a 9.5-point spread. But late in the game, with a few seconds left, Kansas City backed up into the end zone and created a safety, which made it an 11-point spread and changed who would have won the bet. I mean, I don't know. I just, if you're interested in this, and you probably aren't, dear listener, but in case you are, you may want to check out the fine acting job that Patrick Mahomes did in drawing a penalty when he stopped at the sideline to have another player then hit him and push him out of bounds, at which point he flopped like a soccer player, flailing his arms and rolling around on the dirt as if he'd been, you know, the victim of a roughing the passer call, which I think is what he got. And then threw a touchdown. It's suspicious, ladies and gentlemen. All I want to say to that is that we here at Radio Parallax were expressing some doubts about the honesty of the officiating in the NFL. And now it appears we are not alone. An army of fans has joined us in questioning the integrity of the game. Now, Mr. Millen is trying to blame this whole thing on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, but I think that's unfair. And I think because, well, I have no other bright ideas. At this point, Mr. Millen, we should jump into the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, according to The Week magazine, it was a good week this week for reality after the decluttering guru, Marie Kondo, who's the best-selling author of The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, confessed that since having kids, she realized that tidiness is, quote, an impossible standard, quote, unquote. Says Kondo, age 40, my home is messy, but it's the right way for me at this stage in my life. And I confess, I never read her book, so I can't say that it was a lot of knuckleheaded advice, but I, at this point, have my suspicions. And on the other hand, it was a bad week. Last week for, I guess you'd say, parental guardianship, with the news that an Arizona tattoo artist is facing criticism for tattooing a 9-year-old girl with the American flag. The co-owner of Yuma's Black Onyx Studio, who goes by the name Sosa, said he's been getting a lot of hate since posting images of the girl's arm tattoo. But he insists that his conscience is clear. The child's parents gave legal consent, says Sosa, and he thinks he deserves credit for talking the family out of their initial request, which was a portrait of Donald Trump on the girl's neck. Calling Child Protective Services, and as far as giving Sosa credit, well, I guess. And it was an ugly week last week, I guess you'd have to say, for the rights of homeowners, with the news that a Georgia woman spent a night in jail after trying to enter her own home, which was occupied by a squatter. Lolitha Hale says she thought a recent magistrate's ruling had rid her of Sakamiela Johnson, a former tenant's partner's relative who has squatted in the property since August. But when Hale entered the home, Johnson, still there, called the police, who arrested Hale for criminal trespass and took her to jail. Says Hale, something is wrong with this picture. Since we have the time, Miss Merlin, how about another round?
Sure.
According to the Week magazine, it was a good week last week for prepping after Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg addressed reports that he's building a 5,000-square-foot doomsday bunker at his $270 million 1,400-acre estate on Kauai. Zuckerberg told reporters that the underground dwelling, which reportedly has blast-proof doors and food production system, is just like a little shelter. It's like a basement. We at Radio Parallax have called out Mark Zuckerberg and the actions of Facebook / Meta over the last 8 years and in being instrumental to Donald Trump becoming president the first time, and what do you know, again, a second time. Zuckerberg was right there in the mix on Inauguration Day, along with another tech titan, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who decided to have his Washington Post not endorse anybody in particular this last election cycle, contrary to the paper's usual policy. We can talk about all that later. And note that it was a bad week last week for long goodbyes, after a Mike Johns of Los Angeles nearly missed a flight home from Scottsdale, Arizona, because his self-driving Waymo taxi repeatedly circled the airport parking lot and refused to let him disembark. Waymo, for its part, said Johns was not charged for the trip. Yeah, we're sorry about that. This one's on us. And by the way, I was in San Francisco over the weekend attending a play. It was an updated version of the comedy classic Some Like It Hot. And believe you me, with all that's changed in the country over the past 70 years, they added a few wrinkles to the story. But while parking and while in SF, having just parked the car, I noticed a millennial type standing on the sidewalk with his phone in his hand, who was waiting for a Waymo cab. Asked about it, he was very smug and condescending and just said, oh yeah, this is great. This is great. I take this everywhere. And to him and everybody else, I say, well, good luck. And we've openly wondered on this program, and we've openly wondered on this program and may do so yet again one more time. What's going to happen when we have the next Carrington event and electronic systems and our electrical system, our electrical grid around the world is going to get scrambled? Our satellites are going to get scrambled. One has to ask how people are going to get by. At any rate, we would close with the fact that it was an ugly week this past week for political infighting after former Donald Trump advisor Steve Bannon vowed to stop the president-elect's new favorite, Elon Musk, from getting a full access pass to the White House. The tech billionaire is a, quote, truly evil person, unquote, and a, quote, racist, unquote, Bannon explained. Well, he ought to be able to make both those judgments. Bannon says, I will get Elon Musk kicked out by the time he's inaugurated. I guess he made that statement a few days before the inauguration, but what do you know? The inauguration was come and gone, and Elon is going to be given a spot inside the White House. After all, you know, if you're a tech billionaire, you should be invited in. Especially if you spend like $1 million a week to try and get, you know who elected. Which evidently he did. That's probably, my guess is, a conservative estimate. And speaking of political infighting, the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, which is just, you know, something made up out of thin air by Donald Trump, and in fact, not a real thing, is apparently going to be given another office in the White House. But the two guys that were going to be running it, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, well, we're down to one, Elon. Vivek has been shown the door. Now, writing in the Free Press, Rupa Subramayana noted that there was a civil war raging inside MAGA land, a heated battle between Donald Trump's anti-immigrant base and his new tech bro allies. This got triggered when he recently nominated Indian-born investor Sriram Krishnan as senior advisor on artificial intelligence. Krishnan vocally supports expanding the H-1B visa program for tech engineers and other highly skilled workers. The nomination, however, infuriated the nativist MAGA loyalists who rapidly oppose all immigration. MAGA activist Laura Loomer called Krishnan's nomination deeply disturbing, saying America was built by white Europeans, not third world invaders from India. Now, Tesla and ex-owner Elon Musk, an immigrant himself from South Africa, and as we just noted, a key Trump ally, jumped into the fight on social media, hurling the F-bomb at critics of H-1B and saying he'll go to war on this issue. The co-leader of Musk's government efficiency project, Vivek Ramaswamy, then threw fuel in the fire, arguing that tech companies need immigrants because American culture promotes mediocrity over excellence. Well, if you're keeping score, the nativists appear to be pulling ahead on this one, and one of the two immigrants that was going to be heading the Department of Government Efficiency was shown the door. Now, it may be that Musk was given, you know, shown favoritism because of his vast expenditures on Trump's behalf, but isn't it also possible that they kicked out Ramaswamy because he's the brown guy? Mr. Miller thinks that Ramaswamy was in fact born here and his parents were the immigrants. And yeah, good luck splitting hairs with the MAGA crowd on that one. And surprisingly, in this food fight, Trump advisor Steve Bannon called the H-1B program a scam that enables tech executives to hire lower-paid foreigners to serve as indentured servants. And like the stopped clock that's right twice a day, we think Bannon might accidentally be right on this one. Of course, I love the fact that Donald Trump is trying to make peace among his fighting toadies by noting that he has many foreign workers on visas working at Mar-a-Lago and other of his properties. Reportedly, Musk was determined to kick out Ramaswamy. That was according to three people familiar with Musk's preferences who, after being granted anonymity, talked to certain members of the press. And let's talk a little bit about the catastrophe unfolding in Southern California, where the U.S. Weather Service predicted a couple weeks back that they knew there was going to be some very strong Santa Ana winds in the Southland. And because rain has apparently escaped that region, they've got something like a fraction of an inch of rain this winter. There was a strong possibility that wildfires could rage out of control. And boy, did they? Now, there's several factors involved in this catastrophe, but leave it to Trump to step forward and identify the main cause of the problem, which, according to him, was Democrats. Trump criticized L.A. Mayor Karen Bass for being in Ghana when the fire started. He called California's Governor Newsom and incompetent after many hydrants tapped to fight the Palisades blaze ran dry. He falsely claimed Newsom was responsible because he refused to sign a, quote, water restoration declaration, unquote, allowing, quote, millions of gallons, unquote, to be diverted from Northern California. The problem is, no such order exists. Yes, Mr. Milan, I know you're shocked by this, but it appears that was, in fact, nothing more than a lie. And of course, Elon Musk couldn't resist weighing in on the matter. He says that the Los Angeles Fire Department, whose chief, Christian Crowley, is a lesbian, prioritized DEI over saving lives and homes. By the way, did anybody notice that little salute Elon did from the stage. It looked sort of suspiciously like a Nazi salute. I don't know. Looked that way to me. And apparently also Trump or someone from Team Trump, I'm not quite sure, was blaming the Delta Smelt and the protection of the Delta Smelt for the lack of water in L.A. But we would refer you to Dan Bakker's article in the News and Review, wherein he talks about how it is that the Delta Smelt for the seventh straight year has turned up absent from the surveys of fish in the Delta. In spite of the fact they're trying to replenish that fish, which used to be the keystone species of the Delta, so far without success. And since we're begging on that James Bond villain, Elon Musk, we'd like to note also that, well, the effort to get everybody driving Teslas and electrical cars may have been slowed by the fact that down near Elkhorn Slough, the power generating plant down there, which apparently has a bunch of battery storage facilities attached, burned last week. A large fire started, as these batteries are apparently notoriously prone to burn up. For several days, Highway 1 between Watsonville and Seaside was closed on account of this conflagration. But back to the L.A. fire. You know, there was a really wet year. A lot of vegetation grew, followed by a really dry year where the ground got really dry. Then you add in the winds, and my guess is an arsonist or two. And you've got utter destruction of a vast swath of land. If you've seen pictures of what Malibu looks like down there, it's pretty disheartening. But our friend from L.A., Don Rose, pointed out to me a week or so ago that he'd been tipped off to a documentary produced in 1962 showing how it was that large swaths of L.A. were prone to just burn. And back in 62, burn they did. And at the end of the documentary, they apparently said, well, you know, if we're going to prevent this sort of thing in the future, we better, you know, take appropriate steps. But I think if that means you have a choice between putting a wide perimeter around a structure, a home, a building, etc., or building like crazy with things slammed cheek by jowl to make more money, well, I think that that's the direction they took. I'm sure, however, the corporate real estate industry will find a way to blame someone else. I don't know, maybe the Delta Smelt. We made fun, Shovel, many, many years ago on this program about how it was that various areas, particularly in California, frequently burn up. And you'll often see, you know, a remote truck with, you know, a reporter with a microphone stuck in the face of one of the homeowners who's just had his house leveled to the foundation by fire. And, you know, ask if he's going to rebuild. And the reply inevitably would be along the lines of, oh, my God, yes, we love it here in Inferno Canyon. We wouldn't live anywhere else. It's been very controversial in California that a lot of home insurers are backing out, looking around at the possibility of global warming and, I don't know, some combination of El Nino, La Nina, making fires worse and thinking, we want to get out of this business. I think you can say with some assurance that that trend is likely to continue. And will all the rest of us have to pay more money for our insurance because of building policies down in Southern California? Well, my guess is yes. All right, in the 3 minutes or so we have left, we're going to go potpourri, starting with a chat on LED light bulbs. Remember how when you bought LED bulbs, 15, 20 years ago, you were told these things are going to last decades. They'll actually save you money in the long run. Apparently, that was true if you bought one 20 years ago, but what do you know? The light bulb industry has discovered how to burn them out that much faster. If you look on the label when you buy one, it'll note that you're not supposed to put one in an enclosed space, which is where a very high percentage of such bulbs wind up inevitably and then burn out much faster than your aspirations. If you're handy with tools, I'd recommend you check out one video I saw which shows how it is you can cut open an LED light bulb and restore its function. Because those diabolical creators of the bulbs have set the LEDs in series. So when one burns out, the light bulb is no longer any good. But if you go inside the bulb, take a small wire, and bypass the bad LED, what do you know? It works again. I say try it. And can you read cursive handwriting? I mean, you know, in the old days, I think by the time you're in the second grade, you learned how to do that. Well, apparently that's been bypassed in the modern era, which has caused the Smithsonian to put out a call for people who can read cursives so they can go in the National Archives and translate documents into ones that apparently the current generation who didn't learn cursive can now read.
Can't they get AI to do that for them?
Well, I would think so, but what do I know? And finally, I would note that upon checking in a hotel a few nights ago, which I did, I took a lead from a cartoon out of the New Yorker. In the cartoon, a young man is approaching the front desk of a hotel. He's got a backpack on. He's pulling a rolling suitcase. And the clerk says to him, "I have you down for 3 nights and a lifetime of promotional emails." I don't know how many times I've said I don't want to give my email because I don't want to get a bunch of promotions. And I've been told, I don't know how many times, "Oh, no. This is not for that. This is just for sending you a receipt." And then you get a lifetime of promotional emails. So when I checked in the hotel this past time, I said, "I don't have an email address." And by God, it worked. Speaking of email addresses, if you go to info@radioparallax.com, you can drop us a line. And we encourage you to do so. At radioparallax.com, you'll find something like, I don't know at this point, it's over 1,000 programs for your listening pleasure. Yeah, and for our part, we promise that we'll never sell your email address. Let's take a short break. Listening to Radio Parallax, I'm Douglas Everett.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be just so lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely, I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. I'll be so lonely, baby. I'll be so lonely.